Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. I'm your host, Yo. As always, the show where we want to challenge and encourage you, but most importantly, we want to get you to think, and I'm hoping that's exactly what will have happened tonight. Last night at the Lobo Theater, they showed a film called The Privileged Planet, which talks a lot about intelligent design. You probably heard about intelligent design a lot in the news recently. And tonight what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at intelligent design and creationism. Now, I know a lot of you are gasping out there because you're thinking, aren't those the same thing? No, they're not. And that is what we're going to illustrate for you tonight. This is not a debate. This is information for you to get you to think. It doesn't matter to me which philosophy, which belief that you follow, as long as you think it through and know why you believe what you believe. And so tonight we're going to talk about the differences and the similarities between intelligent design and creationism. And if you have questions about these topics, we would love to take your questions throughout the evening. 505-338-5790. So if you have questions on this topic, be sure to give us a call. 505-338-5790. With us, we have Mike Edinburn. He's from the New Mexico Intelligent Design Movement, and he'll be telling us about intelligent design. And then we also have with us Georgia Perdom. I think I said that right. Right, Georgia? Yeah. She is a speaker, writer, researcher with Answers in Genesis, and she'll be chatting with us about creationism. So, Mike, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And, Georgia, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, Yo, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this a whole bunch, just because the reason this came up, let me just set the stage here. We were talking about showing that film, The Privileged Planet, at one of our staff meetings. And everyone was talking about it, and I brought up the idea that intelligent design is not the same as creationism. And jaws just dropped right through the floor. People looked at me like I was from another planet. Like, how in the world could I say that? And I was like, no, people, if you think it through, they're really not the same thing. And people were absolutely shocked by this statement. And so I realized, you know, if my staff that I work with were not aware that there were differences between intelligent design and creationism, well, then a lot of listeners who listen to this program are probably not aware that there are differences between intelligent design and biblical creationism. So I decided to have some experts come in because, you know, I know a little bit about both sides of this, but I'm not an expert in either one. So that's why I brought in the experts. So if you have questions, 505-338-5790 for questions on intelligent design and creationism. Now, let me start with you, Mike. Why don't you explain a little bit the basics of intelligent design? What are the fundamentals of this idea of this movement?
Okay, yeah. Let's see. I think the best way to do it in a quick way is to say that intelligent design is an observation based on scientific evidence that certain elements of biology and cosmology appear to be designed for a purpose by an intelligent agent, and that the design is often so complex or improbable that it defies explanation by natural processes. Therefore, intelligent design is a scientific challenge to the theory of neo-Darwinian evolution.
Which is what a lot of people buy into, often very passively, I think. You know, this is what you're taught in schools, it's what they teach at museums and whatnot. And so, oh, evolution, yeah. It's what's in TV, it's everywhere. And I don't think people even think about it anymore. It's just, oh, yeah, we all evolved, and they don't really think it through. Georgia, why don't you explain a little bit sort of the basics and the fundamentals of biblical creationism?
Okay. Well, we start off with our basis as the of Scripture and the authority of Scripture that is inspired and inerrant, and we believe you should take the Bible, history where it's history, poetry where it's poetry, and we believe Genesis, and we know Genesis to be a historical narrative, so we take it as telling us a lot about how the world began. We believe that the world was created in 24-hour days, about 6,000 years ago, and everything was destroyed in Noah's flood about 4,500 years ago. We see death as a result of man's sin, not unlike, you know, with evolution, thinking as a mechanism to get to the final product. We believe that God created certain kinds of animals and that the species that we have today are simply variations within those kinds, but that humans were a separate creation. We are the only ones that are truly made in the image of God. We see Genesis as being extremely foundational to Christianity and very relevant to today's culture. And we take a very presuppositionalist approach to studying, you know, what we study. We study science too. I mean, I'm a scientist. I have a PhD, and we do science. But we're looking at the same evidence that the evolutionists are looking at, but we're looking at it from a different perspective, from a different starting point. And so we have a different interpretation of it than the evolutionists do. So that's kind of, I think, one of the main thrusts that we need to remember is that we're very, what we call, presuppositionalists. So we're starting with a different foundation than most of the evolutionists are.
Well, yeah, and evolutionists also start with the presupposition that there is no God and that things happened randomly. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, let me ask you about this intelligent design movement. A lot of people think of it as sort of a Trojan horse for getting creationism into the public schools, but that really is not the case, is it? I mean, how do you address that issue when it comes up so often in the media and the news, and everyone seems to think, oh, this is just the creationism movement redesigning and using different semantics for what they're doing to try and get the Bible into schools. But that is not what intelligent design is it?
That's right. A lot of people believe it is. And in fact, I would say that there are probably even some intelligent design proponents that look at intelligent design that way. But I think that most of us, at least most of the intelligent design proponents I talk to, just believe that what they want to do is to get the truth out about origins. And the truth is that there is an awful lot in life and in astronomy that points to an intelligent agent having caused those things. I guess I don't see it so much as a Trojan horse as we just like to get the evidence out, have people see both sides of the evolution debate and make up their own minds.
Which is really, what we try to do here on this program. The important thing for people is to know why you believe what you believe. Don't take anyone else's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Mike or George's word for it. You have to decide why you believe what you believe for yourself. And that's really something that I think Christians need to grasp onto, especially in the current climate that we live in, as we approach the end times. Christians really need to have a solid foundation in why they believe what they believe. Now, Georgia, from the creationism viewpoint, how does that movement feel about the intelligent design movement being lumped together with creationism and the whole Trojan horse to get it into the public schools and whatnot? I mean, what's kind of your view on that popular take on this?
Well, we definitely want it distinguished, and I would say both probably Mike and I would agree on that we don't want them considered the same thing. I've even heard some people use the comment intelligent design creationism, and I'm like, what is that? it's like they're trying to merge the two together and have it as one, and it's really not, because we're starting out, I would say idea is kind of an evidentialist approach, looking at something and saying, does this look designed? Whereas we're more of a presuppositional approach, saying, well, we're starting out with the Bible as our foundation and basing our interpretation of the evidence off of that. So we're kind of taking a somewhat different approach. But I would say that both of us agree that, that things need to be changed as far as the public schools go. And we're not trying to get creation into the public schools. But what... one of the things I really would like to see is just to have the teachers be able to teach good science, be able to have the academic freedom to bring up some of the problems with Darwinian evolution in the classroom, and to have them not to have to teach clearly discredited science, things like Haeckel's embryos and Pepperd moths and things that have not really, you know, shown to be true. You know, they need to be able to just present, you know, like I say, good science. That's what I'm for teaching in the classroom.
505-338-5790. If you have any questions about this topic, questions for Mike about intelligent design, questions for Georgia about creationism, questions for me about the Broncos, whatever your questions might be. Actually, that last one isn't real. 505-338-5790. Now, Mike, let me ask you, what role does the Bible play in intelligent design? Now, my understanding about intelligent design is that it's very much just the fact that the main concern is, look, we had to have been designed, that this could not occur randomly, and that, you know, that the identity of the creator isn't so much important as the fact that there was some sort of creator. Is that an okay understanding of intelligent design, and where does scripture play into this particular movement?
Well, let me see if I can say a few words on that.
But first,
I want to just completely agree with what Georgia just said. You know, that's what we want to do, is make sure that that information can get into the schools and that the kids can make up their own minds. But okay, let's see. The Bible and intelligent design. I guess the best way to start is to say that intelligent design is looking at scientific information. And I kind of see two sort of main theories of how things came into existence. One is naturalism. The other one is creationism. You have different aspects of both of those. You can sometimes combine them to come up with a theory of how things came into existence. But the truth is that intelligent design is much more limited than either of those two. It's just the scientific observation that it looks like we were designed by an intelligent agent. Now, intelligent design can no more identify that agent than chemistry or physics can, okay? And while there are a lot of people in the movement who are Christians, there are people in the movement who aren't. We have agnostics who are in the intelligent design movement. But intelligent design just simply, like chemistry or physics, can't identify who that creator is, although we believe that the scientific information does point to an intelligent agent.
All right, and Georgia, I mean, the answer to that same question is probably fairly obvious for biblical creationism, but why don't you talk a little bit about how the Bible plays into the creationism movement, and perhaps more importantly, how does science play into the creationism movement? I mean, I know intelligent design is very much about science. A lot of people just see creationism as, oh, that's just Bible stories. So why don't you spin it the other way?
Yeah, and that's something that we really try to go against. In fact, I don't even like calling them stories, you know.
Right.
They're events. They're really things that happened. And, you know, we're looking at scientific information, too. I don't like it when a lot of people say that, you know, we're not scientific, or, you know, we're just religion. But we're looking at scientific information, too. But we're using the Bible as our starting point, as our foundation. It plays a very central, pivotal role because we believe, you know, it is the history book of the universe, and it's the supreme authority in all that it teaches. You know, in John 3:12, Jesus says, you know, I've told you of earthly things and you don't believe me. How are you going to believe me when I tell you about heavenly things? So, you know, Jesus quotes Genesis, and he talks a lot about it, and other New Testament writers do too. So, you know, it's inspired by God, so it reflects his eyewitness account. And doesn't get any better than that, so to speak. And it really is our starting point. You know, it's how we look at things. And I'm amazed that when I read the Bible, and I've only been with Answers in Genesis a few months now, but it's just amazing to me how much information is in there as it relates to how do we think about even like developing models for how the world, you know, would have been flooded at the time of Noah. And how do we look at, you know, all of these things that are out there? It can't, you know, it's not going to have all the information about DNA or stuff like that in it, but it still gives us a lot of good starting points, you know, even understanding the original languages and, you know, what does this mean and what does this mean and how does this help us develop develop models to help us understand what went on in the past. You know, historical science is hard. Both ID and biblical creationism, to a great degree, are dealing with stuff that happened a long time ago. And so it's not the same as science that we have today. And so we kind of have to approach it a little bit differently. But in both cases, you know, we can come up with some very good, you know, scientific models to try to help us understand how this came to be.
Well, you know, and evolution even deals with stuff that happened a long time ago. And one of the things that always bugged me when I was in school, when people were talking about evolution, and, you know, this was from good scientists who were saying, you know, science has to be observable and testable and all this type of stuff. And yet they bought into this theory of evolution. And there was no one around back there to observe, so how can they state with such certainty anything about it? Now, I mean, I can understand that there's some extrapolations that you could make from some of the stuff that you can find, but still, that always bugged the heck out of me. It's like, how is that any different than, you know, biblical creationism or intelligent design? All of them are dealing with stuff that happened a long time ago, whatever your definition of a long time ago is, that we weren't around to observe, and we certainly can't repeat, and certainly isn't testable anymore. And so, I mean, that angle of evolution always just bugged me so bad that they were so certain about this, and yet it flew right in the face of their own statements of what is scientific. But that's my own little soapbox about evolution, and that's really not what we're here to discuss. 505-338-5790. If you have questions about intelligent design, if you have questions about creationism, we would love to take those questions and try and answer them for you. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come right back, and we'll talk more with Mike in Georgia and get a little more specific about some of the differences and similarities between these two ideas of how we all came to be here on the planet Earth. 505-338-5790 for your questions right here on Raw Talk.
Several years ago, one of the leading golfers on a professional tour was invited to play in a foursome with the President of the United States, Jack Nicklaus, and Billy Graham. After the round of golf was finished, one of the other pros came up to the golfer and asked what it was like playing with the President of the United States and Billy Graham. At that point, the golfer became completely belligerent, saying, "I don't need Billy Graham stuffing religion down my throat." Amazingly, Billy Graham had not said a word about God, Jesus, religion, or church, yet the pro accused Billy Graham of trying to ram religion down his throat. So how can we explain this? It's really not that difficult. Billy Graham didn't have to say a word. He didn't have to do anything. Billy Graham is so identified with the things of God that his very presence is enough to smother the wicked man who flees when no man pursues. The greater the holiness, the greater the human hostility toward it. It seems crazy. Yet no man was more loving than Jesus Christ. Even his love provoked men to anger. Is your life holy enough to incur the wrath of the unrighteous? Want to learn more about this perfect love? Check out the Get Some Life section at m88.org.
Free radio rally with Pastor Pancho Juarez, Saturday, October 21st at the Wet n Wild in Anthony, Texas. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and the rally starts at 6. For more information, call 888-518-7744.
M88 is now officially on MySpace, and we're looking for you. All weekend long is your opportunity to qualify for a huge CD pack. All you have to do is send a friend request to myspace.com/M88radio. What do you win?
Here's a sneak peek.
The new Seventh Day Slumber.
Will you rescue me?
The latest from Jeremy Kent. Project 86. Edition CD DVD combo from Pillar. You want them? All you have to do is send a friend request to myspace.com/M88radio, and you're automatically in the bin to win. Then Monday morning on the M88 Three Amigos Morning Show, we'll announce the big winner.
It is good to you,
but only if you get to myspace.com/M88radio and send your friend request today. And be sure to spread the word. MySpace.
Welcome back to Rod Talk here on M88. I'm your host, Yo. Tonight we're talking about intelligent design and creationism, and let me just say that any of the opinions that you hear tonight are not necessarily the opinions of M88, its staff, or management. Just to clarify, all right, so you're not all freaking out about what M88 may or not, may not believe. This is just a forum to talk about ideas, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're trying to show you the difference between creationism and intelligent design. Yes, there is a difference. They are not the same thing. We have with us Mike from the New Mexico Intelligent Design Movement, and we also have Georgia from Answers in Genesis, and they're joining us tonight to help explain some of these differences between the two movements. We also have Chris on the line. Chris is joining us here on Raw Talk. Chris, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm here in New Mexico now, and when I was living out in California, I had a scientist mentor, and we always talk about, you know, the grand details of evolution, and it was so fascinating to me. But then there were always these questions that couldn't be answered, and these astonishing, you know, feats of you know, quote-unquote evolution. Like, for example, the human brain is so complex that it would take, when IBM tried to make a computer to match it, it was I think 9,000 tons, and it was 100 teraflops and 100 terabytes, and I was just our brain is 3 pounds 3 ounces, and it's just that in and of itself is just this incredible thing to me. But I saw the Privileged Planet, and I also saw Unlocking the Mystery of Life and the Icons of Evolution, and for me, those three videos by this institute that just sets out to do a scientific discovery on the issue really explained a lot and made it much clearer to me that the debate is not finished yet.
All right. And I think you're absolutely right on that. And let me just say along that issue, Chris, this debate will never be finished, all right? There is no way to prove evolution. There is no way to prove creationism. There is no way to prove intelligent design. So if you're looking for proof, you're never going to find it. That's really not the issue. There's lots of evidence, all right? But how you interpret the evidence is really up to you. And with good information, you can make a good interpretation. Thanks for joining us, Chris, man. We appreciate your comments. Did you have a question or you just wanted to make that comment?
Oh, well, actually, I was thinking of a question on the phone. I'm like, wait, because I just heard it on the radio. Then I got excited and called, but I didn't have a question at all.
Well, that's all right. I mean, I certainly appreciate your comment. If you think of a question, give us a call back, all right?
All right. Great.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Mike, why don't you tell people a little bit about the Privileged Planet film and the Mysteries of Life film, and then Georgia will come to you and get your take on those films as well. So, Mike, okay. why don't you tell us a little bit about those films for people who aren't familiar with them?
Okay, those are two just really great films by Alestra Media. The Privileged Planet is on cosmology. The fact that that it looks like the parameters of cosmology have all been very carefully chosen with the idea of life in mind. There are some of those parameters that if they were even slightly different, we wouldn't have stars like we have today that can support life. And that's the basic idea behind the Privileged Planet. Unlocking the Mystery of Life gives a little bit of a history of part of the intelligent design movement. It's kind of hosted by Philip Johnson. Some of the scientists got together that had some doubts about evolution and started talking about it in the early 90s. Of course, it started long before then.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes on to talk about some of the evidence for design. For example, the remarkable machine that is a bacterial flagellum. And they talk about the people that were involved and why they came to the idea that that there is the appearance of design by an intelligent agent in biology.
All right. And again, 505-338-5790. If you have questions about intelligent design or creationism, give us a call. 505-338-5790. Georgia, have you seen these films? Do you have a take on these films?
I own both.
Okay, well, there you go. All right. So what's your take on these particular films?
The excellent videos. I mean, I think they're excellent to watch because they really do. I mean, I'm a cell biologist by training, so I especially enjoyed Unlocking the Mystery of Life because they have a lot of great graphics and visuals to help people understand not only the cell, but also, as Mike mentioned, the bacterial flagella. So I think they can be really great conversation starters for people, especially maybe those involved you know, more deeply in the secular world or, you know, believing in evolution. And Icons of Evolution gives you a really good picture of what some of our teachers have to go through in trying to even speak up against evolution. Again, like I say, by, you know, confronting the bad science that's in a lot of high school textbooks. And so I think that Icons of Evolution just really, you know, gives you a picture of that and also goes through some of those icons and helps students deal with that. And, you know, that's a huge issue, the public school classroom. That's where a lot of the fights are going on right now. And, you know, I know we recently released a book called Evolution Exposed that goes into, you know, a lot of these different icons that you see in the books and says, hey, here's how we, you know, here's how to interpret the evidence. Here's what's really out there and what's really being said, and give students even questions that they can ask in the classroom of their teachers to help confront them about these different issues. So it's important. We really need to get into that battleground.
505-338-5790 if you have questions about intelligent design or creationism tonight. Now let's get a little bit more specific, and this might be an area where some toes are going to get stepped on, and I apologize, but again, you know, sometimes when we have our toes stepped on, it gets us to think about things. Georgia, let me ask, and then I'll come to you, Mike, about this question. Why or why not is the identity of the creator important to a person's belief system? You know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but intelligent design, the identity isn't so important as who the creator was, but the fact that there was some sort of an intelligent agent. Whereas with creationism, the identity of the creator is extremely important. So talk a little bit why, Georgia, you think the identity of the creator is important to know, and then we'll come to Mike and address that same question.
Okay. Well, obviously, I think it's very, very important. And one of the main reasons, I guess, for me, and just I think other people would say the same thing, is that creation reflects on the creator and vice versa. You can't unlink them. And so without the Bible as our starting point, as our presupposition, how do you handle a lot of what we see in the world today, disease, suffering, death? You know, we just passed the anniversary of 9/11. We've had all this school violence. You know, how do you deal with those types of things, carnivorous animals, you know, disease-causing organisms? And to me, without the Bible, you know, it doesn't say very nice things about God. It says, well, if this is God, why would I want to, you know, believe in him or have anything to do with him? But we need the Bible to help us understand that, you know, all of this that we see is a result of what Adam did in the Garden of Eden, that death was a result of man's disobedience to God or sin. And that's responsible for what we see in the world today. It gives us a really good foundation for that, and we find that foundation in Genesis. But it helps us make sense of what happens in the New Testament when God is gracious enough to send his son to die on the cross so our sins could be forgiven and we could have a restored relationship with him. So it really helps us. It's really extremely foundational to Christianity. And, you know, like I say, Romans 1:20 says, you know, we can see God through what he has made, but I don't think that, you know, that's obviously not where it should end. We have to do more than that. You know, we have to have the Bible as our starting point because, again, what we see in the world today aren't very nice things, and we need the Bible to help us understand that.
And let me just say, when you're bringing up that issue of you know, bad stuff happening and whatnot, next week we're actually going to address that topic from a different angle than perhaps you've been used to. So be sure to join us next week here on Raw Talk as we address the problem of evil from a very unique perspective. Now, Mike, what about from the intelligent design perspective? Why or why not is the identity of the creator, the intelligent agent that did all the designing, important or not important?
Well, let me just say that the identity of a creator is extremely important. It's just outside of the scope of intelligent design. Intelligent design being a scientific endeavor like physics or chemistry, you can look at a lot of data, you can analyze it, you can look at the evidence, and you can kind of put that together and deduce from it that there is a designer, but it simply can't say who that designer is. It just is just simply limited in its scope and doesn't go there.
You know, and again, no offense here, but that sounds a lot like what a lot of my evolution professors would say when I was asking, because they always said, well, this happened, this happened, this happened. And I say, well, what happened before that? And they're like, well, that's not important. And for me, in my mind, that did not compute. I was like, well, how is that not important? I mean, how can you not be curious about what happened, you know, because like with the Big Bang and all that type of stuff. And I kept, you know, it's the law of infinite regression. You keep going back and going back. And it seemed to me, at least for evolution, there's like an arbitrary stopping point. We go here and no further. And my question is, well, why do you stop there and go no further? And they would say, well, this is the beyond that's the realm of philosophy and religion and whatnot. And science can't go any further. And I'm thinking, to get to your point, you still have to have a lot of faith in what happened because it's not testable, it's not observable, it's not repeatable, and whatnot. So, I mean, explain a little bit the difference there between that and evolution where it's beyond the purview, and how does that differ from evolution, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, let me say that I accept the fact that science is limited.
Right.
Okay. The question is, you know, how far should it go? How far should intelligent design go? I think that the best way to explain it is just simply to say that while these are important questions, we can't expect science, physics, chemistry, intelligent design to be able to answer those. They are limited.
Okay. And, Georgia, let me ask you, so far as the creation science view goes, when it comes to this idea of infinite regression, I mean, does that make it any less scientific when you're saying that, hey, we can be scientific about this, but we can go and trace it all the way back to God? I mean, because a lot of, like I said, a lot of evolutionists will say, well, you know, science can only go so far, and then it's religion. And that's why a lot of people see creationism as religion, is because we're constantly going back to God. So how do you reconcile those two when you're saying, no, creationism is scientific, but we know it was God?
Well, it's just that, you know, the Bible is a history book of the universe, and it does tell us a lot about earthly things. And that's where I get, I guess, kind of upset with people sometimes when they say that, is because, you know, evolution has a starting point, just like biblical creation has a starting point. They just happen to be extremely opposite starting points. And it's not about whether there's evidence for creation or evidence for evolution. It's the same facts. It's just we're interpreting them from a different starting point, a different presupposition. And so, one of the things I think in our society today is that we see a lot of compartmentalization by, you know, well, my work is here, my family is here, and my relationship with God is over here. And they're all separate compartments, and they don't link together. And I think that's really sad, because it should be that God is our starting point, our relationship with Him, and everything else is encompassed within that. And I think that that includes how we view how everything we see came to be. That includes our beliefs about physics and chemistry and all of that. You know, we do those kinds of things here too. You know, we are, you know, some of us are scientists that work here, and even not just in Answers in Genesis, but the, you know, biblical creationist community at large. You know, you have the Institute for Creation Research, for example. But we don't believe you should compartmentalize those things. We believe the Bible should be the starting point in our belief in God, and then we interpret our science in light of that. You know, we're still scientists. We're still doing science. We're just having different starting point, and we don't believe you should compartmentalize, because the two are linked. And if you unlink them, then I think it's like you say, like you were saying, you know, it just doesn't compute really well, and that is an important question to answer.
Now, Mike, do you think the whole idea of compartmentalizing, I have trouble with that word, do you think that, you say it very well, Georgia, by the way, good job, but with a PhD, I wouldn't expect any less. do you think that plays into intelligent design? I mean, what's your thinking along the lines that, okay, this is the science part of it, and then you can have, because like you pointed out, not everyone in intelligent design is necessarily a Christian. I mean, being a Christian is not a prerequisite to being a part of intelligent design. So I mean, how does that play into, you know what I'm saying? You know, the compartmentalizing of these different parts of life. Why is that a factor in intelligent design, I guess is what I'm trying to get to.
So I guess the question is it legitimate to compartmentalize?
Yes. There you go. You articulated it well for me.
Science.
Yes.
You know, look, if you believe in a creator, then, of course, he is the one that created physics and chemistry and intelligent design and everything else. I mean, that's certainly true. But the thing is, can you continue to work in chemistry and physics and intelligent design without acknowledging the creator? And there are many people who do. So in a way, you can separate the two, but many of the people working in those fields don't.
Now, this is just out of my own curiosity. Do people who work in intelligent design who don't come from a Christian background, are they ever convinced eventually that it would have to be God? I mean, does that ever happen to people who work in intelligent design?
Let's see. Sure, it happens. But there are people who have been in intelligent design for quite a long time who are still agnostics.
And let me ask this as well, because I was hearing someone else talk about it. And if anyone else has questions, I mean, I don't want to have all my questions answered here tonight just because I'm fascinated with the topic. 505-338-5790 if you have questions about intelligent design or questions about biblical creationism. What are some of the other theories about the intelligent agent that caused creation? Because I know pure intelligent design is not just going back to the Bible and God. There are other theories about the intelligent agent, correct?
Yes.
What are some of those other theories?
Intelligent design would be not only compatible with Christianity, but Judaism, Islam, even agnosticism in some cases, perhaps even New Age. Any belief that has the possibility of something outside of nature could be compatible with intelligent design.
Now, that's not what drew you to intelligent design, though.
No.
What drew you into the movement?
Well, actually, I was drawn to the movement based on the science, mm-hmm. Quite honestly. When I went through school, in elementary school mostly, I learned about evolution. And it was taught as a fact. The points that supported it were given, but the ones that were against it weren't given. So really, just a few years ago, I read a book called Darwin on Trial by Philip Johnson. And after reading that book, it made me angry because I hadn't heard a lot of the evidence that he brought out that challenges the theory of evolution. And so I decided that, you know, I'm going to look into this before I thought that things may have come about by evolution, even though I did believe in God. I thought that perhaps some kind of theistic evolution might be a good explanation. But I started looking into the science of it, and I came to the conclusion that there is very strong evidence for design.
Now, Georgia, let me ask you, and again, let me give the phone number, 505-338-5790 for questions about intelligent design or creationism. In comparison, Georgia, let me just say that it would seem that biblical creationism is extremely narrow because, unlike intelligent design, it does not make allowances for other systems of belief, if you will, when it comes to its particular presuppositions. You either believe in God or biblical creationism doesn't work. So what drew you to biblical creationism, and how does that narrow belief, how does that play within the scientific community when biblical creationism very often comes across, it's this way or the highway?
Well, because I think that's based on what, you know, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. If, you know, you don't believe in me, then that's it. You know, it's kind of one or the other. And so if you're not for God, you're against God kind of thing. And so I think that's where we kind of start from. And, you know, it may be narrow, but But that's okay because we're believing in the God of the Bible and what he says is truth. And so, you know, man's theories are constantly changing, but, you know, God's truth never changes. The Bible doesn't change. And so I think using him as our starting point makes us definitely more sure in some ways in what we investigate and what we do. And, you know, even among, you know, biblical creationists, we have different ideas about how things, you know, have happened in the past. I mean, we use the Bible as our starting point, obviously, but we all have, there's different, you know, flood models and different, you know, models for, you know, speciation and just things like that. But we all at least agree on the starting point and some of the basics there. So I guess that's how I would answer that, you know, yes, it's narrow, but it is the truth. And so we believe in that.
We have David on the line who's joining us here on Raw Talk. David, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
I just had a question for, creation side of the story.
Okay.
When it talks in Genesis, I guess in verse 3, it talks about God creating light, and it says that he created light on the third day, and that was evening and morning the first day, basically. Do you think there's any delineation between the days of creation, how he created the earth before that, so that could be a before time, before the first day, and also do you think... I don't know, do you have any thoughts on what that light was? Because it obviously talks later on about how God created the stars and the sun to govern it on the fourth day. And just to hear your thoughts on it.
Did you get all that, Georgia?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, as far as the light goes on the first day, we don't know what it was. It wasn't the sun, we know that. Because, like you say, that wasn't until the fourth day. So we really, it wasn't God, because God doesn't create himself, obviously. So we don't really know what that light was. There is no, you know, among biblical creationists, we would say we don't really have an answer. We just know that there was light coming from somewhere. There was just some light source. And that's all you need for a day, right, is light and darkness. So,
right.
So it was very easy for that to have been a day. As far as the earth being created, you know, we believe that the earth was created on day one, just by the way, because there was nothing before that. And so in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so we believe that he created that on day one is where we would stand on that one. So it just, there wasn't much to the earth at that point on day one. You know, God had to do a lot more forming in the next, 5 days after that. But that the earth was created on day one.
Now, it is a popular, well, I don't know if it's a popular theory. It's a theory out there that there was something that happened before that verse in the beginning. And what's your take on that particular theory that, you know, before all that happened, there was the whole battle between God and Satan. Satan fell, and that's why the earth was in darkness, so on and so forth. I mean, do you have any take on that particular theory or the gap theory?
Yeah,
or
well,
any
you're
of that?
Referring to the gap theory, I'm
right.
assuming. That there's a gap between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2.
Right.
And again, you know, what it comes down to with that is reading something into the Bible.
Okay.
And really the gap theory came about at a time when there was, you know, a lot of people were saying, a lot of, you know, some scientists were saying, hey, you know, the world is a lot, or the earth is a lot older than just a few thousand years. It's millions of years, as evidenced by, you know, what we see, the fossil record and things like that. And so the earth is actually geologically older. And so Christians said, hey, we need to figure out how to fit this into the Bible. And that's the problem right there. You don't fit stuff into the Bible. You use the Bible as your starting point in which to interpret it. And if the Bible says it's 6,000 years old, then that's how old it is. It's not older. You know, something is incorrect with how you're looking at this. And so it's what we call the difference between eisegesis, which is making it say what we want it to say. You know, and again, it was a reaction to actually, you know, what quote-unquote science was finding. But remember, science is not objective. Science is objective, but scientists are not objective. You know, they all have presuppositions. They all have starting points. They all want to prove something, so to speak. And so, you know, they were the ones out there saying this, and the church was reacting, unfortunately, in a wrong manner and saying, well, we need to fit this in, rather than using exegesis, letting the scripture speak for itself.
All right. Does that help you out, David?
That's helpful a lot. Thanks, guys.
All right. You have a good night. Thanks for calling in. Now, Mike, let me ask you, so far as this whole age of the earth issue goes, does that matter to intelligent design? I mean, does intelligent design care how old the earth is?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people that are intelligent design proponents think that's a very important question, but intelligent design itself really doesn't address that. Okay. It's too limited in scope to actually deal with that question.
What's the prevailing belief among the intelligent design movement so far as the age of the Earth? Just out of curiosity, I mean, do you have any feel for like what most would have their take on that?
You know, I know people on both sides,
okay.
And I really wouldn't, if I was to guess, it would just be that a guess.
Okay. And Georgia, what about for the biblical creationism? How important is the age of the Earth if you want to go with creationism?
Well, it's very important because that's what the Bible, I mean, the Bible tells us it's, you know, based on the genealogy and things like that, we can calculate back how old the Earth is, and it's approximately 6,000 years old. And so I think it's extremely important because one of our other speakers and researchers here, Terry Mortensen, you know, his dissertation, PhD thesis was on that whole concept of, you know, looking back at how what he calls the great turning point, how, you know, people were saying, hey, the world is really a lot older than we thought it was. And so people started disbelieving the Bible. You know, what else can we change? If the Bible isn't true about the age of the Earth, then what else is it wrong about? You know, and so that was really an unfortunate time in history when things really started to change, and when the Bible began to be looked at, you know, as not being truth, because people were believing science over the Bible, and that's a great problem.
Now, I'm going to get a little bit personal with both of you, if you don't mind. Mike, why intelligent design over creationism? Why is that something that you would go with over creationism?
Well, I wouldn't. I think they are different things. Creationism is much broader, has a much bigger scope than intelligent design. I think intelligent design is certainly compatible with creationism, but they are, you know, you can't really compete them against each other,
uh-huh.
because one is a piece of science that gives evidence. The other one is I would call it a comprehensive idea of how what we see came into existence.
And Georgia, what about you? Why creationism over intelligent design, or vice versa?
Well, I think I agree with Mike in a lot of ways in saying that, you know, they're kind of different things. And so I just think that that's something important for Christians and the church at large to realize, is that they are different things. You know, we sell some ID books and videos. We sell Unlocking the Mystery of Life, The Answers in Genesis. So we definitely, you know, I read a lot of their writings and, you know, and look at what they've produced. And so, you know, I have, you know, high regard for it, but in that sense. But I think people just need to realize the differences between the two. That, you know, ID is not an inherently Christian movement. It doesn't necessarily point to the God of the Bible. And, you know, obviously, as a biblical creationist, I believe that is extremely important. And so that, for me, you know, honestly, when I started looking into this whole area, it's been several years ago now, I started with the intelligent design movement and looking at their materials. I was brought up in a Christian home, so I was familiar with the Bible and knew what Genesis taught. But I started there, but for me, it just wasn't enough. You know, I felt like the identity of the Creator is very, very important. And so for me, it didn't answer enough questions. You know, I had more questions, and I wanted to lead people to Christ through this. And so to me, the biblical creation was a more all-encompassing view.
Now, let me ask both of you, so going back to the public school issue, how important do you think, Georgia, it is for creationism and or intelligent design to be taught in the public school?
Well, I don't think they should be.
Okay.
That's what I would say. I don't think, because I don't want people teaching biblical creation that don't believe in it.
Right.
And the same would be true for ID. But what I want, like I said before, is good science. I want good science taught. I want people, I want teachers to have academic freedom to bring up some of the problems with Darwinian evolution. You know, this whole idea of, you know, natural selection and mutation leading you from a microbe to a microbiologist, it doesn't work, you know, and teachers need to be able to bring that up and talk about that. And I want them to not have to present. You know, I know in the school textbooks, I know what's there because I've seen them. And things like Haeckel's embryos and peppered moths and some of these things that are clearly, I mean, just plain old bad science that have been discredited, they're fallacies, and yet they're still taught. And to the point where, you know, teachers are told to teach, well, because you see, you know, the small change occurring, obviously over millions of years, you get lots of these changes, you get
being, you know, eventually you get a human being. You know, that's an improper extrapolation. You can't do that, really. It's improper to do that. So I want teachers to be able to do that in the classroom, to introduce that material and help students to understand the controversy that's there.
Now, Mike, Intelligent Design's received a lot of press about the whole public school issue. So, same question for you. Why or why not is it important for intelligent design and or creationism to be in the public school?
Well, you know, I'm just completely in agreement with Georgia. I think that it's not important necessarily that either one of them be, but it is extremely important that both the strengths and weaknesses of the theory of evolution be taught. You know, it's good science. It promotes critical thinking. It's the way education ought to work. Any theory that's given ought to have its strengths and weaknesses that you can think about and come to your own conclusions. And that's particularly true of this one because the conclusions are so important.
Now, let me ask about the church, all right, because we've shown the Privileged Planet, and when the Mysteries of Life video wasn't shown on PBS, you know, all the churches were very upset about that, so on and so forth. What is the big deal about intelligent design being a part of the church? Because I was talking with one of my coworkers, and he said he didn't understand why something like the Privileged Planet was being shown to a church, because it was kind of like a generic version of creationism. You know, you don't worry about the identity of the creator, but Christians care about the identity of the creator. So why do you think there's such a strong movement of the church behind intelligent design? And do you think that matters at all if the church is behind it?
Yeah. Yes, I think that's, of course, it's important to the church because the idea of intelligent design certainly supports the idea of a creator. While it doesn't identify one, it supports it. And so I imagine that churches could very easily get behind that idea. Now, that's not to say that the churches are the only ones interested mm-hmm. in intelligent design, but it's a tremendous support to the idea that there is a designer or a creator.
Georgia, what do you think about the whole mishmash of how the church is becoming more and more identified with the intelligent design movement? I know some people in ID, the whole ID movement, they're kind of upset that, like, look, we are not a Christian movement. That's not what this is about. And yet there seems to be a groundswell of support for it from the church. Georgia, what do you think? I mean, how important is it or is it not for the church to be a part or not a part of this whole intelligent design movement?
I think the church really needs to realize, and one of the things I find when I talk about, because I have a talk on this particular subject on the intelligent design movement, and I really find that most Christians don't realize it isn't Christian. And I don't know, we just need to do a better job of educating or something and getting the word out there that, you know, I mean, a lot of what they produce is very good. Like I say, we sell it here through Answers in Genesis, and I strongly recommend a lot of the things that they do put out as far as, you know, books and videos and things. But we need to understand that it's limited, like Mike's saying. You know, it's what we call more of like a minimalist approach. You know, they're not trying to answer who the identity of their creator is. And, you know, we as Christians should think that's very important. Not to say that ID can't be useful, but that it is going to be limited. And we really need to remember that the Bible is very, very important in telling us how all these things came to be and telling us the reason that there is sin in the world and how we can be redeemed from that sin.
We have David on the line. David, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi, I have two questions. The first is for Mike. With with the person who holds the agnostic intelligent design, who or what is the designer?
Boy, that's a good question, and it may seem kind of strange to some people that someone who believes in intelligent design could be an agnostic, but believe me, there are those out. Michael Denton wrote a very famous book that probably got the intelligent design movement started. He's an agnostic. I think he would not necessarily say that there's no designer so much as he would probably say that you can't really identify one.
Mm-hmm. And what's your second question, David?
The second question is for Georgia.
Okay.
What literary and contextual evidence is there in Genesis for a literal 24-hour creation period?
I'm sure you get that question a lot, don't you, Georgia?
Okay, what was the question again?
The literal, what evidence is there for a literal 24-hour day in Genesis?
Well, because, oh boy, how much time do you have?
We got about 4 minutes, so go for it.
I'll just be real brief on that. There's a lot of evidence. There's ordinal numbers associated with it, like second, third, fourth. You have morning and evening associated with each time. And every other time outside of Genesis that you see that particular usage, it always means a literal 24-hour day. And there's over 1,000 times other than that, other than what's in Genesis and the Old Testament as evidence for that. And if you want more information on that, just visit our website at www.answersingenesis.org, and you can find articles on that that'll tell you more about that.
Does that help you out at all, David?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you very much, David, for calling into Raw Talk. We're just about out of time. Mike, why don't you tell everybody where they can go to learn more about intelligent design if they'd like to pick up more information about that movement? And while you're looking for that, Georgia, tell everybody once more where they can go, because I know Answers in Genesis actually has a lot of, at least I read one article on your website that compares these two issues. So tell them where they can get some resources, not only about biblical creationism, but the two in comparison.
Okay. Yes, if you go to our website, which is www.answersingenesis.org, and we have a great Get Answers section that you can type. We have lots of different topics there. You can type in a word, like if you typed in intelligent design or whatever, you could find some more articles on that. We also have, you can also contact us. We have a department here which strictly takes care of answering any questions that you have. So if you don't find it on the website, you can go there. We also have a bookstore that you can obviously go through and buy materials. And we're opening a museum here just south of Cincinnati, Ohio, called the Creation Museum that will be open next spring, which we're really excited about it. $25 million museum, lots of, I think 50,000 square feet, hope I got that right, but lots of exhibits and things that you'll be able to see from the biblical creationist perspective. And like I said, a bookstore and things like that are open now. So if you live, you know, out in New Mexico, you probably don't, but if you live in the area and you're hearing this, you can come on over and see what we're all about.
All right. And Mike, about intelligent design.
Okay, some websites here in New Mexico, nmidnet.org. The national organization is intelligentdesignnetwork.org, all in together. Another great place to look is discovery.org. And then there are four books that I would highly recommend. One is Evolution, A Theory in Crisis by Michael Denton, Darwin on Trial by Philip Johnson, Darwin's Black Box by Michael Behe, and Icons of Evolution by Jonathan Wells.
All right, so a lot of information for everyone to think about. Mike, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I've certainly appreciated you being here. And Georgia, thank you as well for being here, and I appreciate you sharing of your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And let me just wrap things up tonight by saying, you know, again, this wasn't a debate about which is right. And if you got anything out of it, hopefully you found that they're actually compatible in a lot of areas. The important thing is always remember this. You were not an accident, all right? You are not a random event that is some entity with absolutely no purpose. You were created. You were created with a purpose, all right? The Bible says that we were fearfully and wonderfully made. And if you want to know what your purpose is, if you want to know what the secret of life is, I remember I did this in a college class once, and my professor, in a kind of a sarcastic manner, said, "Oh, I suppose you know what the purpose of life is." And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." And he's like, "Okay, what is it?" "Your purpose in life is to know God and be loved by Him and love Him back." And he, like, gave me the weirdest look, but didn't say anything in return, and walked off. But that is the truth. That is your purpose. You do have a purpose because God loves you. That's why He created you, to love you. So never forget that. And if you have more questions about this, you can go to those websites that we mentioned, or certainly you can email us here at m88.org. Check out our website if you want to catch a podcast of this particular show. Send us an email, studio@m88.org, if you want more. But never feel like you are an accident, because that's simply not true. You were created with a purpose, and God loves you. Next week, we're going to talk about the problem of evil here on Raw Talk. We'll have a local pastor from out in Edgewood joining us who presented a very unique perspective on this. And again, not something that you have to agree with. You don't have to agree with anything that was said here tonight. You don't have to agree with anything I said here tonight, but I hope that it at least got you to think. Think about it. Know why you believe what you believe. That's the number one thing I hope you take away from Raw Talk each and every week. Hope you have a shway week in the Lord, and thanks for joining us here on Raw Talk on M88.